Good afternoon, everybody. I'm opening the meeting of the House Energy and Environment Committee on Tuesday, June 2nd, 2015. And I'm going to start off by opening a work session on Senate Bill 412A. And we have Senator Roblin here. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
It's a privilege to be here.
Sure.
Wonderful. And before I get started, Beth, do you want to give the committee a little reminder of this bill?
Sure. Madam Chair, members, Senate Bill 412A would establish that the upland placement of dredge material by a port district is productive. That is a requirement of a DEQ rule for the placement of such materials. There is no revenue impact and no fiscal impact.
So, for the record, Arnie Roblin, State Senator from District 5, which goes from Coos Bay to Tillamook Bay and into Sheridan and Falls City in the Valley. So, in that particular district, there are a number of ports. And one of the things that ports do, whether it be with the federal government's assistance in the main channel or whether it be in their where they have their docks and other kinds of stuff in the marinas, is dredge. Over time, silt and other kinds of materials move down rivers and end up in bays and harbors and distribute themselves in places that make it navigation very difficult. And so we do believe, and I do in particular, that it is a beneficial use to do the dredging. It makes the area safer, and it allows for the activities that take place in those ports. In this particular bill, what we're asking you to consider is the actual dredging is a beneficial use. That allows DEQ to deal with the materials in a different way than they do now. And next, it doesn't allow them not to follow their own rules with respect to what those materials consist of. Some of them have a lot of other material in it, and therefore it was going to have to be taken to a disposal site. Other parts of it are good material that can be used in a lot of different purposes. What this bill does is it allows them to take that and store it, put it on an island, and if they have a future use, because the beneficial use was the withdrawal of it and the dredging itself. It's a very simple bill, can be very helpful to a number of our ports up and down the coast, and in particular, at this particular moment, the place is Portland, and I know you're going to hear from them as well. But it has been used for beneficial uses, not only from the removal, but beneficial uses for habitat and others up and down the Columbia River when they've done things. And in our area, one of our biggest little wildlife deals right in the middle of town, at one time they actually thought about making it an airport just across from the harbor in Coos Bay, were spoils that were put there by the Corps of Engineers for the last 75 years. And it's developed a whole new part, an area where a lot of wildlife exists. And so I believe that there are other beneficial uses that come of it over time, but the issue is here in working with these processes, the fact that it is being removed from an area where it can cause safety and other kinds of problems is a beneficial use in itself. And I urge your eye support on a fairly simple bill that I believe will be a benefit to ports all over Oregon. And a benefit to wildlife and others if used in appropriate ways. So I thank you for the opportunity to come and speak to you.
And thank you so much for coming back here.
And any questions you might have, I would be glad to ask.
Any questions for the Senator? Okay.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too. Representative Reardon, would you like to make the motion?
Oh. Do we have paper?
Do pass motion.
I have it, Madam Chair.
Where was that word?
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 412A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Widener moves Senate Bill 412A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Thank you.
Any objection? Hearing none, the motion passes. We'd like to carry this bill. No. Representative Boone. All right, Representative Boone will carry. With that, I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 412A and open a work session on Senate Bill 259A. And Beth, could you give us a reminder of this bill?
Madam Chair, members, Senate Bill 259A would authorize the Energy Facility Siting Council to allow the compensation of a state agency or local government for their expenses that are directly related to their consultation initiated by an applicant for a notice of intent or a request for an expedited review prior to the submittal of a notice or request. There's no revenue impact and minimal fiscal impact.
Okay, excellent. Thank you very much. Representative Rubin.
Thank you. Chair, I move House Bill, or Senate Bill 259A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Reardon moves Senate Bill 259A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, the motion passes. Is there someone who'd like to carry this bill? Oh, Representative Reardon. All right. I think somebody was trying to nominate you, Representative Hurd, but we'll
not this one.
All right. With that, I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 259A and open a work session on Senate Bill 752. And Beth, you want to go ahead and...
Madam Chair, members, Senate Bill 752 would exempt carbon dioxide emissions from the combustion or decomposition of biomass from regulation under certain air pollution laws unless it's necessary to implement the Federal Clean Air Act. No revenue impact, no fiscal impact.
Okay. Thank you.
And what are we on?
752.
Chair, I move Senate Bill 752 to the floor with due pass recommendation.
Representative moves Senate Bill 752 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion?
Just for
Representative Bowlby.
Madam Chair, thank you. You know, after thinking about this bill for a little bit, I just couldn't really come to, I guess, a decision about why this bill was necessary or what it was really going to accomplish. And as such, I just don't know that we should be exempting, although there's a lot of exemptions already. I just am uncomfortable exempting things from some of our statutes going forward. I think that there's a potential that we may want to have those statutes apply at some point in the future. So I'm going to be a no on this bill.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Colby. Representative Helm?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I share some of the same concerns as Representative Holvey. I'm going to be a yes, but I wanted to get a couple of things on the record in the same vein. When I think we heard the presentations on this bill, the idea was that it could help rural communities and it could aid in salvaging some timber that we otherwise want to be salvaged in good management practices on our forests, and that would be used for generation. I think that's all good. I do share some concern about air quality, so the caveats for me are I want to be closely watching and to see if DEQ air quality monitoring indicates that there's an uptick in particulates that are harmful, and if we see that happening, I would like to become involved again and take a second look at this, because I know that particularly in southern Oregon, where we have had wildfires and in the winters there are some inversions from time to time, the air quality does suffer from the very type of use that we're contemplating here, which is burning biomass wood for energy. So I think we need to watch that very carefully, and if it looks like it's becoming a problem, we need to bring it back and have a second look and make sure that everything is abiding by our air quality standards. Mm-hmm. But I'll be voting yes. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Booth.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just wanted to weigh in on this. This is a really good bill. And the burners that we have in, for example, the Vernonia, the new schools in Vernonia, have been working out just fine. They're using up some of the forest slash and providing energy, and which also, in order to get it, provides jobs. And it also, if it matters to anybody, passed unanimously in the Senate. So,
thank you, Representative Boone. And I appreciate the discussion that we've had on this bill. I think one of the things that, when considering this bill, was the fact that it had been in the practice and rule to have this type of exemption, and this is codifying it into statute, but it doesn't let any, it doesn't have any difference other than, you know, the carbon dioxide piece of it to what DEQ does on these things, and it also keeps it within the Federal Clean Air Act, you know, in terms of any decisions that are made or changes that are made to that. So, okay. Any further discussion? Okay. Let's do the roll call vote.
Representative Hurd.
Aye.
Representative Volpe.
No.
Representative Betts.
Aye.
Representative Boone.
Aye.
Representative Weicker.
Aye.
Representative Helm.
Aye.
Vice Chair Johnson.
Excused.
Vice Chair Reardon.
Aye.
Chair Baker Peterson.
Aye. The motion passes. Representative Hurd would like to carry. With that, I'm closing the work session on Senate Bill 752 and opening the work session on Senate Bill 829A. And Beth?
Madam Chair, members, Senate Bill 829A would require DEQ to take certain actions when developing or selecting among methodologies to assess waters of the state pursuant to the Clean Water Act. There's no revenue impact and no fiscal impact.
Okay. Thank you.
Chair, I move Senate Bill 829A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Reardon moves Senate Bill 829A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Weiner.
Just real quick, I was trying to stay quiet so we could get out of here, but I do want to commend the department for their work on this and opening up to look at all aspects of everything to make sure they come up with the best product viable so industry can have some certainty in moving forward and going forward. And I just want to commend the department for their work on this.
Yep, they did some good work in trying to find a solution on the Senate side that worked for everybody. Thank you. Any further discussion? Any objection? Hearing none, the motion passes. Who'd like to carry this one? Representative Benz. All right, thank you very much.
Get a more knowledgeable person.
You can try.
Is he your favorite? I'm the one that said good things about Palmer. Is that available?
Oh, wow. I didn't pay him to say that. That would be a more articulate individual.
Yeah. We're going to close the work session before Representative Benz gets slandered. All right. At this point, I'm going to turn the gavel over to Representative Reardon for the informational hearing from Oregon State University and Daimler Truck. I'm looking forward to having that. Unfortunately, I have to step out for another meeting, but I'm really glad that you guys could be here today to share the research that you're doing with the committee. And before we start that, though, there are a couple things that I wanted to have you guys thinking about. We're trying to figure out a good day to do the field trip to Salem Smart Power Center. So we're looking at right now June 9th or 11th at 3:30 p.m. So if you guys could take a look at your calendars and let Beth know if those work for you. And I think she'll be sending out an email about that, too. Also, we need to find a really good day for the committee party. So also take a look at your calendars. I think doing it maybe on one of the days when we're not going to need to meet for this.
What was the time on that again, on the 9th?
At 3:30 p.m. on the 9th or the 11th of June.
So we got 3 to 5 on Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and with finishing these work sessions, we've completed our business for the session. So aside from the field trip and the party, I think we're done. So thank you all so much for all your work this session.
You went down with a bang today, too. I like that.
Yeah.
No.
Yes. So leaving. All right. With that, I'm passing over the gavel. Thank you, guys.
Opening an informational hearing on Oregon State University and Daimler Truck Research. Very pleased to have you here this afternoon. And I'm actually very disappointed that Representative Johnson is not.
I know.
With us. He will be here.
He will be here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. And, oh, please, I'm sorry. Rookie here at the gala today. So, and whoever would like to start.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Bob Associations. With me today is Professor Rob Stone from OSU and Derek Rotz from Daimler Trucks North America. And these gentlemen are going to give the real presentation. I'd just like to give a few opening remarks and sort of give you some background on how we got here. Back in 2012, I was reading an article in the newspaper about a program that Microsoft had developed with the University of Washington. And
sorry.
Yes.
Go ahead, excuse me.
And basically the way the program worked is they had a joint software review lab where the students worked alongside of Microsoft engineers, and they developed software. And that benefited Microsoft because they were getting some cutting-edge software. It benefited University of Washington because they were getting part of the proceeds from the patents off of the software. Plus, the students were getting trained, and they were becoming software engineers. So when they graduated, they went to work for Microsoft. So it was a nifty, closed little system that worked really well for everybody. And when I read that, I immediately thought of Daimler Trucks because they have their major research and development facility on Swan Island in Portland. And what a nifty partnership that would make with OSU. So I talked with, excuse me, Lynn Peterson, who was the governor's senior transportation policy advisor back in 2012. And she said, you know, I think that's a really good idea. So we went and we talked with Derek, and he said, you know, we have 100 vacant positions for research engineers today, and we can't find people to fill those jobs. And when we find people, they come from Michigan because they have automotive programs to support the automotive industry in Detroit, but they don't know anything about trucks. And he said, if we could have trained engineers that knew about trucks, that would be a real benefit to our company. So we went down and met with the folks at OSU, and they were equally as excited about doing it. So we came into the legislature in 2013, and we had a big meeting with Senator Beyer. And there must have been 14 or 15 of us, I don't remember. And it was really clear that we needed to go home and do a little more homework and sort of define the relationship between OSU and Daimler and how all the details would work before we came in here and asked for your help. So we have been doing that since the beginning of 2013. And now the partnership is on the cusp of being a reality. And matter of fact, some of the elements have already begun. And what we're looking to do is to develop the truck, the heavy-duty truck for 2050. So it will be the low-emission, no-emission truck for 2050. It will dramatically reduce all kinds of emissions, including carbon. But sort of the beauty of this idea here is that Daimler sells trucks all over the world, not just in Oregon. And so that technology will make its way into their trucks and will make a huge impact on carbon emissions and climate change over, throughout the world. So this is very exciting to the trucking industry and to me personally. And so with that, I would like to turn it over to Professor Stone, and he'll begin our presentation.
Thank you guys for having us here today. My name's Rob Stone. I'm a professor of mechanical engineering at Oregon State and also the head of the School of Mechanical, Industrial, and Manufacturing Engineering.
Thank you for being here.
All right. So I thought I would start with just a little bit of background on where we've been in terms of the relationship between Daimler and Oregon State. It dates back several years to the Super Truck sort of research program that the Department of Energy has funded. A couple examples, you know, two of our professors there, John Parmigiani and Con Toomer, have worked on aspects such as lightweighting the future truck using sort of advanced composite materials versus the standard steel. Dr. Toomer, you know, worked on the advanced cruise controls that look at not only, you know, speed but also elevation so that you sort of plot a course and an approach that is most fuel efficient. And so some things that we started and have had a great relationship with Daimler on that. That has led us in the past couple of two and a half years, I'd say, as we've sort of worked up this concept that we're here today talking about of the Trucking Research Laboratory. began with a face-to-face meeting back in February of 2013 at OSU. Derek and one of his colleagues were down, and we sort of did a running show of all of the faculty that we have hired recently at Oregon State and sort of their expertise as it applies to the trucking industry. Found a lot of good matches there and saw that not only as a pathway for research, but also a pathway for all of our undergraduate students who are, you know, interested in the automotive industry. We had a group there called Society of Automotive Engineers, so it gives those a pathway to not only pursue research, but also identify sort of a future employment home. Last summer, we sort of kicked off a version of this. We did an internship with Daimler, so one of our incoming graduate students came out summer early, worked with Derek and his folks at Daimler. And then later last year, we also received a donation from Daimler of a sort of the Class 8 Cascadia truck, which was really one of the prototypes along the way as they were working on the Super Truck project. And it's the picture there you see, it's sitting back at OSU and is serving as a test bed for several projects ranging from sort of capstone senior design projects to future research projects. So this is essentially what we're asking for and sort of what we would do with that if you were, if it comes to pass. And so the total request is about $2 million with the sort of the first chunk of that being sort of setting up the trucking research laboratory. And so you see the three aspects of that. The first one is hiring what we're calling an operations manager for the lab, who would be someone who would coordinate the different research projects that are going on amongst multiple faculty, make sure the students are there and ready, and then spend those 2 years sort of figuring out how to fund themselves in the future. So this is sort of one-time funds to help kick this off, and then this person would be sort of a staff researcher that would continue work in this area under external funds. Then we have a 500,000 line there that would essentially be our first round of graduate students in the trucking research lab. And so these would essentially work with faculty who are doing research in the area, and the projects that we're working on with Daimler, provide funding for them to come to school, have a stipend, and a little bit of support for the projects. Mm. Then that third item there is sort of outfitting and what we call equipping our trucking research lab. And so this is to make sure that we have the equipment, sort of the testing equipment and all sorts of computational support and sort of tools and whatnot in the trucking research lab so that the faculty involved can perform the research at a appropriate level. And then the final block there at the bottom, really, this is our matching fund, and so we see this as a pot of money that would allow us to go after additional funds, such as future Department of Energy federal grants, or are matching things that could be research-related or even sort of educational-related that would lead to better and more sort of automotive engineering programs that support the state. All right, and I wanted to give you an idea of just maybe where we can go from this. And so this is, maybe what this leads us to. And so down the road, this could put Oregon sort of as the epicenter for trucking and heavy automotive research on all things sort of affecting fuel efficiency. And so the Super Truck program to date has really been about how do we improve the fuel efficiency of these heavy trucks. And as a picture there, I put sort of the International Center for Automotive Research. This was a collaborative effort between the state of South Carolina and Clemson University and on the sort of the public side, and then several private companies such as BMW and others. And so I think it would be fitting that, you know, us in Oregon and the environmentally conscious Northwest, that, you know, what we're known for is really how do we improve fuel efficiency and help at the same time helping industry and business. The benefits, you know, just sort of quickly, you know, this again, it provides a pathway for our current undergraduates who are interested in automotive engineering. It's a way for them to move into graduate school and become sort of that workforce that Daimler is looking for, and as part of that getting good jobs. It helps both Oregon State and Daimler, I think, attract good talent. And so with this in place, we foresee not only just Oregon students, but perhaps nationally, some of the best in the country wanting to come here in order to sort of get an education that, that helps them ready, it makes them ready to work in the automotive industry. And it's really, you know, as I mentioned before, it's an opportunity for us as Oregon to export as technology things that lead to lowering the carbon footprint. I wanted to throw in this just to remind us of at least why I'm here every day is some of the students. And so I spoke briefly about the Society of Automotive Engineers. So that's an organization within our mechanical, industrial, and manufacturing engineering program. They have sort of two competition teams. One's the Baja you see in the upper left, which really is just a souped-up dune buggy that they design and build every year and race. They've been very successful for that. If you look at their credentials, they've been sort of in the first or second place finishing for the past many years and haven't done worse than fourth in over a decade. So definitely we have the aptitude and the interest in students sort of in this automotive area. On the right-hand side, you see the other piece of SAE, and this is our Formula Race Car. And they have also been an outstanding team over the past few years, finishing first in sort of the national competition at Detroit every year, four out of the five last years. And so we've got talent and we have interest and we have a lot of success in this area. Oops, I think I went the wrong way. There we go. Try that. So to summarize for me, I think this is a great sort of strategic partnership between OSU and Daimler and the state. You know, Daimler hires our students. We want to prepare them to work for Daimler and fill those open spots that they haven't already filled. Our OSU students are really ready and to work in this area. They're not only, you know, the folks who are coming out of the SAE programs, they're going to race teams, they're going to traditional automotive companies in Detroit, they're going to Tesla, they're going to things like SpaceX as well, anything that moves and moves fast they like. So I think it's a great opportunity for the students of our state. And we've got the required expertise to advance this research. We've hired over 26 faculty over the last 4 years. Those have come in really hungry to do research projects and to partner with industry to do sort of these types of research projects. And so I think, you know, with the proposed state investment, we will be able to establish that lab that makes Oregon known as the place for really, you know, fuel efficiency as it relates to heavy trucks. And I think with that,
all got. Wow. Any questions for this presenter? Rep Boone?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Wish you would have done this like a couple months earlier, but I have a soft spot in my heart for Oregon State Engineering College of Engineering. For my son's a civil engineer,
okay,
and worked a lot with the Ocean Engineering Program.
Okay, great.
And this is great. When we started hearing the, I can't remember the number, but I think Senate Bill 324, the low carbon fuels stuff, we heard about this program and wish that you could have given this at that point too. Maybe my mind is gone and you did it, but stop me if I have. Anyway, this is very interesting, and I wanted to ask there is a question in this, but is there a specific bill, or is this already in Ways and Means, or what's the story on it?
Madam, or Mr. Chair, Madam. Representative Boone, we did make this presentation earlier in the session, but we made it in front of the transportation sub of Ways and Means.
Thank you.
And those folks are all on board. The vice chairs are on board. Everybody wants to help us, so we're very hopeful that there will be a solution between now and the end of session. And if there is anyone on the Ways and Means committee that you would like to talk to about this, we would greatly appreciate that.
Follow up?
Yes.
So it's in the cauldron down there, but it will be cauldron. Going to the 400 bills in the cauldron. It's kind of a stew at this point, but it's in transportation.
It is in transportation, okay. And there's, you know, that there's discussions ongoing about a transportation funding package. And assured that this would be inside of that if that occurs. And if not, it's important enough that it will be considered also outside and perhaps in the end of session bill or something like that.
Just one more. Do you have any idea yet on how much of, I mean, you're going to replace your trucks. We'll probably address to you, Derek. The number of trucks you produce, what the emissions levels would be lowered to, or you know, that's terrible English, sorry.
I'd like to finish up with questions for Professor Stone.
Oh, okay.
We haven't heard from Derek yet.
Okay, well,
but he's going to tell us all of that.
Yes, he is.
Indeed, yeah.
So, I have any other questions?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
Is that okay now?
Please.
Based on what we just heard, yeah. Thank you very much. I appreciate you guys being here. We've been looking forward to this hearing. You know, because as you know, there's a huge interest and push to move our try to move part of our transportation sector from traditional fuels into electric vehicles and that sort of a thing. But we know that that's not going to work for everybody, and that doesn't meet all the needs of our society and stuff. So I'm really interested in finding out how we can use traditional fuels more efficiently and produce fewer emissions. And I think that's what you all are about. You mentioned in one of your slides there about the opportunity to export technology, which I think is really fascinating because, to me, again, as we try to look at what role Oregon could play in the global scheme that could be most beneficial, we could shut off every internal combustion engine in the state and not make a hill of beans difference in the global airshed. But if we have the will and the capacity to invest in some of these technologies that you're talking about and other initiatives and export that technology then to those parts of the world that obviously could benefit from that because they're the folks that are expanding at a pace that's off the charts, then we can really accomplish something and really show leadership, I think, on a, not just a national scale but a world scale. So how close would you be, or at what point could you expect to be at the position of being able to export some technologies? And would they also lead to being able to manufacture products in Oregon as well? It comes from the research that you're doing.
Okay. Thank you, Chair and Representative Johnson. For that, I think, in our vision, the first 2 years that we're asking for will set us up to be ready at that time to provide important solutions that Daimler's looking for, and they are our vehicle, pardon the pun, that is going to take that globally.
Okay.
So I think this is really our first step into there. I fully expect that the Department of Energy, sort of at the federal level, is going to be coming back with additional programs like that, looking at how do you sort of reduce the carbon footprint by fuel efficiency and things like that. And this gives us a chance to sort of jump ahead and be ready for that when it comes out.
Okay. Follow up?
Yeah.
So is your proposal scalable? Let's say you're asking for $2 million. What if there was $20 million available? Mm-hmm. What might you think about doing with that?
Well, that'd be a great problem to work. I would look to some of the things, you know, such as the International Automotive Center that's in mm-hmm. South Carolina and Clemson as models. But they really did sort of scale up pretty quickly to where not only do they work with existing faculty, but it becomes a way to sort of add capacity within the university with folks skilled in automotive engineering research, and it allows us to be more dynamic and sort of essentially produce more engineers capable of doing these types of activities for companies like Daimler. Mm-hmm. So the scale up, that would be an awesome problem to work. And I think, it would be something that wouldn't be out of reason, you know, given the interest from Daimler and the interest in our faculty and, mm-hmm. and other faculty that we could potentially hire to bring to work on the problem.
Okay. And one more follow-up, if I could. So you mentioned Oregon could be a center for truck research. Is that just simply because of that Daimler connection, or is it because of the university, or is it a combination of both? What is it that would put us on the map?
I believe it's the combination. So Daimler Trucks North America is of course headquartered here.
Mm-hmm.
one of the biggest names in the business. Oregon State is, I think the best engineering school in the state. Given that partnership and the history we have of working together, I think that's what's going to allow us to put this on the map. We've got, from the places that I've been in university life, we've got probably the most willing sort of faculty and staff at Oregon State that want to engage with industry and do everything from fundamental to very applied research. And mm-hmm. and that's sort of a magical potion that we've got that I would love to allow to see where it goes to.
Great. Thank you very much.
Oregon State has historically worked with industry very well and has such great partnerships, so it's really great to see this expanding. I just want to get a clarification. I don't know if you know this or maybe somebody in the back. Is this $2 million ask included within another larger number that it's not shaking the head? So there's another number that's being floated around by Oregon State, so this is addition to that. Mm-hmm. And you've already answered there's a lot of student interest. And do you have the facilities to put the lab in, or is that being developed as well?
So thank you, Chair, for that question. On the facilities side, we're in the process of building sort of a shell of a research building on campus. And if that comes to pass as expected, then the trucking research lab would have essentially a bay in there that we would outfit sort of as the center hub of this lab. In the event that that doesn't happen in a timely fashion, we're taking a distributed approach where most of the faculty have existing labs somewhere on campus, and we would outfit sort of those existing labs with the equipment that made sense for that particular line of research, and go about it that way. So we're prepared to.
Where would you like to be in 5 years?
In 5 years, it would be great to have a facility that brings it all together. I mean, the distributed one is how we can get it done, but sort of a central location where sort of all the research happens, where our industry partners can come and have a presence and be a part of it. That's where I'd love to be in 5 years.
Great. So, Derek?
Yes.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Swap here. Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Derek Rotz. I'm a manager within the Advanced Engineering Group at Daimler Trucks North America. And today I'd like to give you a presentation on basically background behind Daimler, the motivation for engaging in this lab, and then some details from the Daimler perspective. As many of you may know already, Daimler is a global manufacturer of passenger cars and trucks, looking at not only the Mercedes passenger car department that sells vehicles worldwide. The Daimler Trucks organization is actually quite global organization. I dared say even more global, let's say, than the Mercedes passenger car group, because there is local development centers here in Portland, Oregon for Freightliner trucks, in Stuttgart, Germany for the Mercedes brands, as well as Mitsubishi Fuso in Japan. So we actually have a global reach across the world and development centers as well, where we can leverage the knowledge from the other groups, share the knowledge of the other groups, and so on and so forth. In addition, Daimler produces buses for both city transit as well as motor coaches, vans, financial services. So it's obviously a very, very prominent player in the global automotive market. Certainly as well, within the United States, Daimler's got a very large presence as well. We're looking at roughly about 20-some thousand employees, generating about $40 billion in revenue. In Oregon alone, we're talking about 4,500 jobs located in Oregon for Daimler, essentially the headquarters for Daimler Trucks North America. There's a manufacturing plant on the island for Western Star and Specialty Vehicles, and we're currently in the process of building a new global headquarters, and so that's mm-hmm. that's going up. I can see it right outside my office window. It's not quite like that yet, but at the end of next year, it should be fully operational. So Daimler's really committed to staying in Portland, staying in this region, and being a member of the Oregon community. Contrary to what some people have stated, it is not Henry Ford that invented the automobile. It is Gottlieb Daimler and Carl Benz. So just for the record, apart from inventing the automobile and the engine itself, Daimler really prides itself in its technology leadership, and we're a leader with the development of numerous technologies. And this is just kind of a list of that. Looking at the world's first vehicle with the safety zone that crumpled in the engine compartment and the trunk area to basically secure the passenger compartment. In the late 70s, world premiere of the ABS or anti-lock braking system, which made leaps and bounds and improvements in terms of vehicle safety, and so on. Adapting that to trucks, of course, looking at skid control, rollover controls. There's a lot of firsts that Daimler has there as well. And if about a month ago, actually, we just recently came out with an announcement in Las Vegas that we got the world's first licensed vehicle for autonomous trucks to be operated in the state of Nevada. So we're able to do testing and continue this sort of groundbreaking work as we move forward. But also on top of that, looking specifically at the climate change, the environment, clean air, I'd like to say that over the past, probably about the past 15 to 20 years or so, a lot of the developments done in the industry, and particularly at Daimler as well, has been to essentially clean the air, remove emissions and pollutants from the air. In the upper left-hand corner, you can see that's just a graph that depicts where the emission standards were pre-1988 until they reached into 2010. We're looking at NOx emissions as well as particulate matter. And so the net there, that small red box represents where we've reached in 2010, which is essentially a 98% reduction in emissions. And so, as we like to say, basically one vehicle from pre-1988 emits more pollution than over 60 of them today, and so we've made huge strides in reducing those emission standards. From an engineering perspective, when you start pushing on those emissions, the ironic thing happens is that you get a decrease in efficiency. And so what we ended up doing is we increased diesel particulate filters and other systems would actually kind of have a negative impact on efficiency. And that graph in the middle kind of shows when we introduced something called EGR, which is exhaust gas recirculation, we actually took a penalty in terms of emissions or in terms of efficiency. And we're currently clawing our way back. I think we've by 2015 we're close to achieving the pre-level. Before the dip occurred, but essentially what we're looking at moving forward now, that since the NOx and the particulate matter emissions have reduced to a point, we see the future in the coming decades, of course, being CO2 emissions, and so this is where we're going to really need to focus on. And CO2 is directly related to fuel economy, so our focus is really on the fuel economy standards moving forward. As Rob had alluded to earlier, there's the Super Truck Project, which was a co-funded program from the U.S. Department of Energy. It started in 2010, and it's a five-year program. I oversaw the vehicle development on this program, and the goal was to build a prototype vehicle which is 50% more freight efficient than the baseline vehicle. So freight efficiency taking both fuel economy and weight reduction into account, making the vehicle more efficient. And so it was really an aggressive goal at the time starting, and we didn't know how or even whether we'd get there, and worked very hard in the intervening 5 years to achieve that. In total, it was an $80 million program, so it was a 50-50 match, 50% from the Department of Energy, 50% from Daimler. It was actually passed as part of the Stimulus Act of 2009, or the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. So part of this project actually entailed us working closely with Oregon State University, as we had talked about, both on the cruise control as well as the lightweight materials on that project. So I'm going to hope that the internet is available. So we recently came up with achieved our results earlier this year, and so without giving too much of a spoiler alert, we have part of it. We created a video. So the 50% target was definitely a daunting goal.
We want to develop the most fuel-efficient truck running on the streets in North America.
The question was, how aggressive would we need to be? Each individual manufacturer received a Department of Energy Supertruck grant.
We immediately embraced it because it fit exactly our long-term strategic plans. We want continuously to improve fuel efficiency.
They not only want us to look at technologies that could be implemented in, say, the next 5 to 7 years, but also technologies that were 10 years or plus out. We had to do a clean sheet approach. We looked at the very beginning over the external aerodynamics of the vehicle. You try to take your ideas and shape it into something and then test it. You say, okay, is that aerodynamic? And once you get there, it's a question of how do you turn that into a real truck? So the first phase was identifying and measuring our baseline and then figuring out what we needed to do to get to 50%. The cooling team had to work with the aerodynamic team to say, okay, yes, we both need to meet our goals, but how do we do it together? Within the Supertruck program, we are able to leverage the knowledge and expertise of the Global Daimler Organization, experts within North America, both in Portland as well as in Detroit. We have our Global Hybrid Center in Japan.
Our powertrain experts, they came from Detroit and from Germany.
You can really leverage expertise across the globe, across different national labs, and that really accelerates the development of the technologies. The Supertruck features the integrated Detroit powertrain. You can downspeed the engine to reduce the frictional losses and achieve fuel consumption reduction.
In order to overcome the trade-off between aerodynamics and cooling, we came up with an innovative grill design. So open the grill only in times when cooling required and close the grill under high vehicle speeds in order to improve aerodynamics. Waste heat recovery was not something that heavy-duty trucking had at all.
So what we try and do with heat recovery devices or systems is to recover some of that energy, especially from exhaust, which just escapes out of the tailpipe, and utilize that to drive the truck itself, thereby reducing fuel consumption.
The contribution to trailer aerodynamics was certainly a very surprising thing to us.
We looked at the nose cone, trailer side skirt, and the boat tail.
Over two-thirds of the benefit actually come from the trailer.
How that affected the tractor, things like eco-roll and hybrid, we had more energy to recuperate simply because the tractor and trailer were more aerodynamic as a system.
At the end, we achieved 115% freight efficiency improvement on public route in Texas between San Antonio and Dallas. We also saw better than 12 miles per gallon fuel consumption, which is amazing. Never heard about in the industry.
A 1% in freight efficiency over the 10,000 vehicles running at 120,000 miles per year, I mean, you're saving millions in gallons of fuel.
We have to invest in the future, not just of our company or the economy of the United States, but in the future of the entire planet.
We were able to work on very high-risk, high-reward technologies and provide functional demonstration on a linehaul vehicle.
The Supertruck program provided us the opportunity to see what's really possible, not today, not next year, but many years into the future. So that's a little bit about the Supertruck created by our marketing group. I don't think our engineers would be as as creative to come up with such an emotional type of video. But I think it does capture the essence of what we did on the program, which we just recently wrapped up, actually a couple of months ago. And so, as far as the outcome of the program, we did exceed very comfortably the targets. We reached a 115% freight efficiency improvement on our route in Texas with an average speed of 65 miles an hour. We did achieve 12.2 miles per gallon, which actually in the trucking world is pretty phenomenal. I'll have to say that our baseline vehicle got about 6.1 on that, so we almost doubled the fuel economy. The engine itself had a target to reach a 50% brake thermal efficiency, or just a 50% engine efficiency, and a lot of that research for engines was done in Detroit by Detroit Diesel, our partner on that. A lot of the vehicle type technologies were done here in Portland. And so pretty good results. We're very, very pleased with that. But when we talk about something on the order of like the 2050 time frame, doing the calculations, if you're looking at reducing by 80% or something like that, you're going to require a vehicle that will achieve excess of about 30 miles per gallon or something. So we've gone from 6 to 12. That's still a far cry from what a 2050 goal is, if we're talking about something on the order of what the state of Oregon is envisioning, somewhere between 75% and 80% reduction by 2050. There's still a lot of work that has to be done to do that, and as opposed to passenger cars, when we talk about electric vehicles and those sorts of things. I did the calculation on a napkin. We'd need about 30,000 pounds of batteries to drive this truck at 80,000 pounds. Exactly. Quite frankly, there's no room for freight anymore. So, that's why we need something really revolutionary in that respect. This is a sort of a snapshot in how we did the development and the list of technologies. We started off with what we affectionately call them tinker trucks. They were our first trucks where we had to sort of play around with certain technologies. We built up our first A-sample vehicle, which has a large laundry list of technologies, which I won't go into. We did some testing last year on that. And then the final demonstrator vehicle on the right, again, adding another longer list of technologies to getting that truck to run. And we completed the tests at the beginning of this year to get those sorts of results. So it really does take quite a bit of effort, quite a bit to get to the level where we did within the Super Truck program. And when people think about efficiency improvements and so on, the first thing they'll typically go to is to say, well, let's take a look at the engine. Let's make improvements on the engine. And that's very true. But that's only part of the story. When you look at the engine losses, there's a part where the losses occur. But then there's also a lot of losses in terms of the aerodynamics, drivetrain efficiencies, the auxiliaries, rolling resistance. So there's a lot of things that are separate from the engine that actually contribute to the fuel economy of the vehicle, and I feel I've looked around. There isn't really a research center that focuses on these sort of vehicle type, tractor trailer 18 wheeler type of research on improving efficiencies. And so we're essentially identifying a gap in the research, as it were, and looking to fill it with this proposal here. And so, kind of how we structured it, the truck research lab, as we call it, what we're proposing here is the 3-year pilot program, 2015 through 2018. We're looking at creating graduate fellowships over the course of those programs, for graduate programs, also supplementing that with undergraduate capstone programs. So really starting to ramp up. On some research topics there. We have an MOU that we've written, and it's awaiting signature right now, so we've got a good understanding between Daimler and OSU what we want to do. Daimler commits to this venture by not only helping to define some of the research topics and bring to light some of the challenges to providing the efficiency gains, earlier last year, actually, we donated a Class A tractor as part of that. The only problem was where to park it, I guess. So that was part of it. And I know there's two sides of the equation for an engineer to be productive. One is to actually have the hardware on hand. The second is to actually have access to relevant engineering data or CAD, so you can do some design in the digital world, make some parts, put it on the truck. And we're also looking at committing to providing summer internships for these graduate students to not only get them acquainted to the trucking industry, how engineering works in industry, getting them up to speed on some topics and familiar about getting familiar enough with trucks so that once they go to the lab at OSU they'll be more productive. And this is sort of a proposal on how that would sort of play out with the graduate fellows and having sort of an overlap period to transfer some knowledge. As we see that the lab will take a little bit there'll be a little bit of a teething effort, so to say, to get the lab up and running. But we think within this pilot, what we expect at the outcome of it is to have something that's really sort of fully functional, creating research, generating results, and focusing on the target at hand, which is the fuel efficiency improvements. And I believe that's about it.
Well, great stuff. Questions?
Well, I don't know if you remember it, but how much carbon emissions that you will lower?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, Representative Boone. So carbon emissions is directly related to the fuel economy itself. I can say that the trucking industry in America, essentially trucks haul about up to 70% of the freight in the country and contribute about 20% of all the fuel consumed, and so there's a pretty significant amount of fuel being consumed there, and hence potential for reduction. If I were to sort of calculate that on a CO2 basis, I would be trying to do the math in my head right now. Oh. But we're talking roughly somewhere between 30 and 40 billions of gallons of diesel consumed every year, and so. With the super truck, for example, which by the way consists of some technologies which we've already have spun off into production, but we also looked at sort of like high risk, high reward technologies, which quite frankly still need further research, and so there's kind of a mix, but I believe the potential would be pretty large given those numbers.
Follow up, and I mean without putting you on the spot or anything about. Because it's kind of a global vision for this, where Daimler sells across the world, what's your market share in the trucking industry, for example, that you would eventually replace the existing trucks?
Okay, yeah, it's a great question. So essentially, the market in the U.S. Roughly between maybe 250 and 300,000 vehicles per year.
Oh.
And Freightliner is fortunate to be the market leader. Our market share is actually somewhere between 35 and 40%. A lot of that's due to the fact that we actually have the best-in-class fuel economy as well, and that's something that the fleets really see. And so as a leading manufacturer in the U.S. And actually globally, when you look at the global Daimler Trucks organization, we are the largest commercial vehicle manufacturer in the world. I think you can start mixing and matching terms a little bit with Volkswagen on Class 2 vehicles, but as far as like medium duty and heavy duty, we are the lead. So the potential is pretty good.
Thank you.
Other questions? Representative Wood.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I apologize for missing most of it. My phone just... Anyway, so a question I had was, and you may have covered it, maybe you didn't, was what do you... Are you getting miles per gallons back with this super truck as far... Okay, so what was that at? And at what weight was that at?
Okay, it's a great question, Mr. Chair, Representative Hurd. The baseline vehicle achieved about 6.1 miles per gallon. And the super truck on the same route achieved a 12.2, so essentially a doubling of the fuel economy.
What was the gross vehicle weight?
The gross vehicle weight was 65,000 pounds.
But what is, have you done any, because this state, a lot of people are doing, I don't know what they call it, maxis, 105,000 pound gross vehicle weight. Have you done any tests with that?
Not at 105. That's relatively uncommon sort of in interstate commerce. We typically test at about 80.
Oh, you said interstate. I thought you meant here. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Typically, though, wouldn't it be about 80,000?
80,000 is generally the gross vehicle weight limit, and there, the rough rule of thumb between 65 and 80, I would say, is about 1 mpg.
Okay, and which is phenomenal. I'm not trying to cut you down. I'm enthusiastic about what you're doing here, and I want to promote it. But and I'd love to tour any facility that's available, especially after the session. But you spoke of earlier about software involving the cruise control as you approach a hill and whatnot, and I've driven a lot of truck, dump truck, freight truck, whatever, so I've got quite a bit of experience with this. Now, I'm assuming you're talking about while you're on the flat and you're approaching a hill, you gently gain some speed so that you can, it's like I do with my electric car, I can kind of ebb and flow and all that good stuff. But correct me if I'm wrong, it would almost seem like to me it would behoove us as a state to give our freight trucks the option within a certain distance of a hill, temporary license to advance to 65, 70 miles per hour so that they then actually can achieve that back off. Because if we're expecting them to hit it at 55 and back down to 40, 30 to make that same situation happen, it causes new problems, because then you're going about 10 miles an hour once you get to the top of the hill, which everybody loves that.
Right. Traffic controls. So, Mr. Chair, Representative Hurd, that's exactly the case. And the predictive cruise control, as it's called, we have it's a speed band of plus or minus 6%. So we're talking about maybe 3 or 4 miles an hour above the set speed. It does cause a problem when you have a hard road speed limit and you're unable to, like you say, gain a little speed in advance of the hill.
Exactly.
So certainly, part of it's fleet practice, part of it's, making sure that we keep safe road speed limits. But having a little bit of hysteresis there, having a little buffer up and down, actually helps as well.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. So that tells me we do need to make some adjustments potentially with our speed limit stuff. Did you do any testing at 70 miles per hour, 65 miles per hour? What was the negative effect? Did you find that, with a car it seems to be 50 is the sweet spot, but with a freight truck maybe it doesn't bother it as much at 65?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hurd, that's correct. So we did testing in Oregon at 55 miles an hour. We also did testing in Texas at 65 miles an hour. About 43 states have a road speed limit for trucks at or above 65.
Yeah.
So we wanted to make sure that it operates at that speed as well. We didn't test any faster, though.
I guess it's a fault. What was your finding, though, as far as was there a difference in mpg?
Yes, good question. The 12.2 was the measurement in Texas, ironically, it was a little bit lower in Oregon, despite the lower speeds. So part of that is weather related. I'll have to admit that. But I think part of it is lower air. So normally at higher speeds, you have more air drag and lower fuel consumption. We think the aerodynamic improvements meant that the drag penalty at higher speeds was less, so that we weren't suffering as much from a penalty there.
I'm sorry, I'm full of questions. I would assume that, though, because you're dealing with such a mass amount of weight versus a Honda Civic, and yet you still have it contained, the air restriction is on the front of this vehicle, and so whether it's 200,000 pounds or 100,000 pounds, it's still the same amount of sail in the front, and so actually more weight potentially battles against that air friction cutback.
That's correct. I mean, generally speaking, at higher weights, you'll have, obviously, you'll require more energy to push through. But at higher weights as well, basically if you're going down a grade, for example, you'll be able to accelerate, or you'll mm-hmm. face less resistance.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, there is some acceleration at play. There's some braking that needs to be done in advance. So it's a system. It takes. You have to look at every aspect.
Representative Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move that the committee recommend that we allow Representative Hurd to be borrowed by this program and that he report
Can
back
I drive
to
it?
Us.
Can I drive it?
But seriously, as part of the program, obviously you're creating new IP all the time, and I imagine you're amassing patents at a very impressive rate. Will Daimler own those patents? Will the state benefit by those patents? Will OSU benefit? So that's the first part of the question. And the second part is, what are we thinking about licensing different parts of the IP? For example, I could see that the aerodynamics component could be licensed and used with different drivetrains in different parts of the world and get us the efficiencies that Representative Johnson's talking about earlier before we roll out a whole truck and say it's this truck or nothing. You see what I mean?
Mr. Chair, Representative Helm, the question regarding the IP, how we've set it up in the memorandum of understanding is that anything that's invented in OSU would be OSU owned, and Daimler would negotiate a license to use. Anything that's invented on Daimler property, that would be Daimler owned. That's how we have it set up. And then the question regarding the rollout of the license. I mean, yeah, it depends on the technologies that one invents. If it is a relatively simple sort of standalone add-on, then that can run well on its own feet. If you're making some base changes to the cabin or structure, then that requires a full vehicle, and that will take a longer time to roll out. And again, if something is invented that may work well within, you know, wave energy or some sort of related field or unrelated field to trucking, then I mean, there's those possibilities as well. So,
one follow up, Mr. Chair.
Certainly.
Thank you. and this isn't related to the IP at all. I'm sorry, but I'm just curious about how driven is your design. Are your design considerations determined by the size of trailer and the shipping containers that seem to be set by a completely different industry? Could we do better by considering changes in the size of shipping containers or that standard 53-foot semi-trailer?
Mr. Chair, Representative Helm, there were certainly opportunities for allowing so for larger combination vehicles is one option. Where I mean, in Oregon, we do allow doubles and in some cases triples. Mm-hmm. So increasing the volume, and then also the other aspect would be sort of increasing the gross vehicle weight. You know, there's a proposal to go from a, you know, 5-axle 80,000 pounds to maybe a 6-axle 97,000 pounds, which you could achieve without you know, incurring additional damage to the roads. I think there's challenges to getting things like that rolled out that are not technical in nature, but certainly if we can, a problem we see in the industry is either we say cubing out, you take up the full volume of the trailer and then there's no more freight that you can put in, or grossing out, which means you reach your full vehicle weight and the trailer isn't. Not to be
a new term.
Not to be confused with other meanings, but your trailer fills up and your weight limit is reached before the volume is there. So those are some engineering wise. Those are simple. I think there's a regulatory aspect which makes that challenging. But as far as other size and standards, it was mentioned in the video, you know, there's a tractor and a trailer. Like we do, Daimler, you know, manufactures tractors. We don't do as much on trailers. Super Truck showed a possibility for doing some integration there. And so, you know, for example, you know, a university setting would be good for really understanding the relationship between the two and seeing what possibilities are there, because right now, you know, tractor and trailer engineering teams are completely separate. They're not working together, and they're not looking at ways to improve. So there could be some opportunities there as well.
Thank you.
I That would be good.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Derek, thanks for your report. This is fascinating stuff. What kind of price point are we talking about for this new vehicle? Is it going to be available at a price point that's affordable for fleets, or what do you anticipate for retail on something like that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, so regarding pricing, we do set metrics in terms of what the customer will allow, mm-hmm. in terms of pricing, and then an acceptable payback period. I'll leave it a little bit like this. Typical Class A tractor may consume between maybe 15 and 20,000 gallons of diesel per year. They're driving maybe, you know, six miles per gallon, 120,000 miles per year. Just really simple math. You're talking about 20,000 gallons of diesel. So if the widget that you invent saves 1%, you're saving, you know, 150 to 200 gallons per year. And you have to pick your price of diesel to calculate that out. But you're typically looking maybe, customer price between $600 and $700 per cent that would give them maybe a 1 to 2 year payback period, somewhere along there. And so adding anything that you invent will be sort of limited by that sort of cost constraint amongst other things. And so. Some of the things that we have on Supertrucker actually met that. Some of them are still pretty far off. And the nice thing about the program is we were able to study it. We now know much more clearly what those hurdles are. They still exist, but we know exactly what needs to be done moving forward. And so customers are very, very cost conscious, and they operate large fleets and consume a lot of fuel, so they keep an eye on that. So.
Actually, I need to go to Representative Boone.
I had the same question, so that's perfect.
Teaming it up down there? Good.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Carry on.
Thank you. I'm guessing there will be components or parts of the research could be also integrated into truck manufacturing as well, right? There are certain components here that could be, scaled up, or it's not the full meal deal necessarily, but that also is available to export, maybe to other manufacturers, other carriers, and so forth. And so you have the truck itself, which is the prototype. Is it being manufactured now, or is this still
correct? The super truck, though, is that we have two prototypes.
Right. Okay. You're not in full production yet.
The approach wasn't necessarily to bring this specific truck into production, but to develop the technologies that we put on the truck, and then as they mature, we spin those off into production vehicles.
Okay.
And so since the 2009, if you look at the 2009 model year Freightliner and the 2015, there's been a couple of waves of improvements. In 2013, there was an aerodynamics package that was introduced that improved fuel economy by about 7% or so, and those findings were informed by Supertruck.
Okay.
And then earlier this year, we have a new powertrain package, which has a optimized transmission axle engine. But the point earlier about things like predictive cruise control and using GPS and 3D maps to control the vehicle speed, that's an example of something that had been actually invented in Portland, and then it basically went over to Europe, and that's actually a standard component now on all Mercedes-Benz trucks. Hmm. And for trucks here that are using automated manual transmissions, it's standard now. So that's an example of how that technology can sort of spread in all directions.
Okay. One final follow-up, if I could. If we talk about carbon and efficiencies and cutting back and stuff, we like to talk about tons of reduction and that sort of thing in terms of emissions. And maybe one of you can do the calculations, but if you're saving 15 to 20,000 gallons of fuel a year per vehicle, let's just say, on this, what would that equate to in carbon reduction? Is there a way to put that in a formula we could just tell folks that this is what this will do in terms of cutting carbon emissions?
Okay.
Potentially.
I would have to look it up specifically. It's roughly about 20 pounds of CO2 per gallon of diesel. And so if you're
per gallon,
roughly speaking, we'd have to really check behind those numbers. So if you're saving 1%, 1% per truck. I mean, this is 50% it's actually 115% fuel economy improvement, which is a 50% reduction. But for every 1% then per year, let's say it's 200 gallons of diesel, 4,000 pounds per percent per truck per year. And so multiply that by number of trucks. I guess there's roughly...
Can I have a question?
Real quick.
What
I haven't gotten to ask.
Do you have
No, go ahead.
You got the hammer. So just to cut to that, I mean, obviously it's at least a 50% reduction because it's twice the fuel economy, but then what is the carbon output per mile per gallon versus a standard truck? Do you have that number? Is it like your engine is supposed to burn, you know, clean carbon, all that stuff. So if it was apples to apples, 5 miles per gallon, 5 miles per gallon, is it 20% of the carbon because of its technologies versus a standard?
So the best way I can answer that is for every gallon consumed or every gallon saved, you can equate that to a certain amount of carbon. So I mean, if you're getting 5 miles per gallon and you're driving 5 miles, then for that 5 miles you'd have 100 pounds of CO2 emitted roughly. And so if you reduce that by 1% or 10% or what have you, you reduce it on that. I would have to get back to you if we wanted to sort of roll that out, what this means in CO2 reduction overall. But I would like to also maybe comment there's some aspects of the commercialization and the technology of maybe sort of near term and mid term technologies. I think there's the aspect of the 2050 goals and what that means in terms of having to go much, much further than what even Supertruck has, and really I put 5 years of my career into this, and I thought we got pretty much as much as we can get, and that's not nearly enough. And so some of it is actually to put brighter minds to bear at the task to see how creative we can get, because I don't believe we can get to the 2050 goals with a standard diesel engine truck. I mean, that's kind of my take. And so on a longer time horizon, we're not really probably looking enough into what it means to try and achieve that for 2050. And if it, if development takes a decade or two to have a certain new fancy technology out there, I mean, we kind of need to start now on it. So
Rep urged that I could ask a question, so take advantage of that. So, diesel trucks have just a really long life, and we have a lot of those obviously out on the road now, and there are probably some out there that are pretty dirty. Is there a business opportunity to apply some of this technology to the older trucks, either through retrofits of accessories or total rebuilds? Is there any possibility of that?
Mr. Chair, yes, I think there are some possibilities for that. There are some challenges as well. Mm-hmm. Trying to design something that's backward compatible typically has its sort of challenges. I think retrofits are possible, but it adds another element of difficulty to it. So if we were to for example take a new hood that we the super truck's got this fancy looking hood, so if we were to try and fit that, that would be challenging. If we were to update some software to do a cruise control to run it more efficiently, that's definitely possible. So that's sort of case by case.
I think a lot of the streamlining stuff might be done. I was really delighted to see the what I call them, fender skirts or whatever, but you're going to control the spray and make them more aerodynamic. So that sounds like a real winning option.
Absolutely.
And this panel is great because I asked most of my questions. So, are there any other questions?
Yes. I yielded my time to you, but that did not mean that I...
Well, thank you.
Yes. May I? So we talked about weight, the 97 pounds I think you referenced. I mean, because really the goal here is not to say, oh, our truck gets 15 miles to the gallon at whatever weight. It's to get from point A to point B at the max miles per gallon per pound transferred, just like a train.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, which why is a train so much more efficient? Well, one of the main reasons is because you got 50 cars going in the same line.
Mm-hmm.
Again, like I talked about, the same sail, but you got all this weight coming behind it, so it's so much more efficient. So maybe that's something we need to look into, as especially because correct me if I'm wrong, California is really, and I don't know about Washington, but California is a huge obstacle from that standpoint, because I believe they do not allow over a double. And I do not believe, well, you would know that, and I do not believe they allow over 80,000 pounds gross vehicle weight.
Mr. Chair, Representative Ward, we have a freeze that was put in place by Congress on all truck size and weights throughout the country.
Really?
And so every state was frozen where they were in 1991. Basically,
what's the limit?
Well, it varies by state, and each regulation, size and weight regulation for heavy trucks, was actually codified into federal law, and it takes an act of Congress to change it, which doesn't happen very often. So we are sort of stuck with what we have, as is California. There is a move afoot to change the national standard from the 53-foot single trailer to twin 33-foot trailers.
Mm.
And that's before Congress as we speak. And so that would have a huge impact on how much fuel it takes to move a pound of freight a mile. If Congress does that, that becomes the national standard. We can use it clear across the country.
They're good questions.
One more.
And then I know Cliff told me before that freshmen only get to ask two follow-ups at the most, and I know I'm way past
Cliff
that.
Cliff doesn't hear. Let's do one more.
But I've saved them up all year is the point.
Maybe we can take the tour.
We talked about the 2050 goals and how we get there. So what, and this will be my last question, what have you guys done looking into LNG fuel being a part of the mix with diesel, you know, a hybrid type engine, or methane from different sources, if we can actually start purifying and utilizing that fuel? Have you done any testing on that, what it does to this situation?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Hurd, Freightliner is active with natural gas, both CNG and LNG. We do offer a vehicle today with a 12-liter a natural gas engine. I don't recall if it's spark ignited or if it's with a diesel pilot injection, but we do offer those today. I think a lot of the challenges is in deploying. We saw for a good period of time a lot of interest. It was sort of the infrastructure and that setup which was kind of holding things back, and then just the volatility in fuel prices. So when there was a big disparity between diesel and natural gas, then the topic flares up. And right now that gap seems to be closing a little bit, as does some of the interest. And so we continue to offer that. And I mean, if we do see it, you know, moving more into the future, you know, we will certainly, you know, follow those activities and respond accordingly. It does offer some CO2 benefits, I think, in terms of the carbon content of the fuel itself. There are some other challenges with, like, methane emissions and so on. When you refuel, that would have to be overcome, because there's some aspects there that need to be looked at. So, but it is one option.
Any one last question? Were you raising your hand?
Me?
Yeah.
I just wondered if Daimler's going to be a part of the World Climate Conference in Paris in December.
Mr. Chair, Representative Boone, I wouldn't know, actually.
Probably from the other end.
Thank you all for being here. Obviously, a lot of interest in your work, and hoping that we can find a way to support that. It's fantastic. I'd love to find a way to replicate this in other industries as well. So But appreciate it. Very enlightening, and can I come to work for you?
Yeah, exactly.
Sounds like fun.
Thank you very much.
So I'm going to close the informational hearing.
Thank you.
Oops.
Thank you
very much.
Oh.
Mr. Chair, I request unanimous consent that rules be suspended to allow Representative, what's his name, Johnson, to vote on 259, Senate Bill 259A. Do you do them all together?
Yeah, I think you can do
okay,
them.
Senate Bill 412A, Senate Bill 752, and Senate Bill 829A.
Rep. Boone requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended to allow Rep. Johnson to vote on the Senate bills listed that she just mentioned, 259, 412, 752,
what a loosey-goosey committee.
Mr. Chair, I'm okay with all of them. I'm not sure about 412. Should we? Oh, we can allow the 412 as well.
I didn't ask about you. So, were you, was he in the motion?
Can we do all four of them at one time, or do we need to do them individually?
She'll call off each one at this point.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Even better.
We'll do them.
I'm reopening work session. Is there no objection? So ordered. I'm reopening the work session on House on these Senate Bill 259A, 412, A 752, and 829A. Rep. Johnson, how do you vote?
Call off each one.
Vice Chair Johnson. Senate Bill 259A. How do you vote?
Yes.
Senate Bill 412A.
Yes.
Senate Bill 752.
Yes.
Senate Bill 829A.
Yes.
Excellent. I'm closing the work session on all those Senate bills.
Okay.
You
voted. Yeah.
Next party. Into a party. Into a party. Into a party.